morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. We have a full house today in Sedona, and it's like being back east. I had to dig the car out before I could get here.
Well,
okay, Mike.
We want to mention President's Day. This is President's Day where we honor 44 out of 45 presidents, because the schmuck in the office right now, we can't he's about to become a dictator. That's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the emergency powers that he has. We're talking about the emergency, the declaration of emergency that he's done for his wall that nobody wants. But we have a guest in the studio.
Well, yes, we do. And we haven't seen him physically in a long time.
That's true.
Silent Gary LaMasser.
Right.
Hello, Gary.
Good morning, everyone.
And, of course, we have Klaus von Stutterheim.
We got them all.
Your German accent is incredible.
We have all.
Well, I've been practicing it for years. One thing I've wanted is a good German accent.
We have all the German the resistance in the studio this morning.
So I guess what happened is that, Trump tries out this whole wall thing. And, it's a 2,000-mile border, and I think he originally had something like the Great Wall of China, a little bit thinner in mind, for 2,000 miles. So he found out he got a real response of any immigrant feeling to this slogan about a wall, which never ever made any sense whatsoever and is pretty much impossible to build within financial, I'm talking about completing the whole thing within financial abilities of the U.S. So he made this promise, and he just won't back down on it. And the way those things are supposed to work is that he's supposed to go to Congress and negotiate some kind of a amount of money for the wall. That's how it works. Generally, in our system, the House of Representatives, the Senate, control the purse strings. Right. That's the way they divided off executive power. In the United States, you have a lot more executive power, and it's been building up in my lifetime as the Cold War happened and so forth and so on, more and more emphasis on executive power. But it was always assumed, and I think Klaus and Mike can explain the act. It's an act that allows the president to divert money in a national emergency from the Defense Department to the national emergency. And originally it was actually put in to sort of limit what the president could do. So, Mike,
I'm talking about New York Magazine here. Jordan Chault talked about the worst case scenarios. For people like myself who are completely anti-Trump, I mean, I don't see anything redeemable in this human being, let alone as leader of the free world, let alone
his
hair. Okay, I'm not even going there. All those petty little things really irritate me because there's so much serious stuff here. We're seriously becoming. Madeleine Albright, don't have to listen to Mike Cosentino. Don't listen to Democratic Perspective. Listen to Madeleine Albright. She wrote a book, Fascism, A Warning, okay? And we're talking about the president here and the Republican Party.
So
what your question is, what does the declaration of emergency, it gives such a man as I have been describing for the last minute, a really broad powers. Let's see, Trump's claim of emergency powers that would expand barriers on the southern border is a gross violation of democratic norms, it says in New York Magazine. At best, it is a craven ploy to cover his own blundering, but the worst case scenario is that it gives him executive powers far beyond our institutions that some people in this room and many people in the country think will save us.
Let's focus on that, and we'll focus on the wall. I mean, he made this preposterous promise, then he's decided that he has to keep it.
Mexico was going to pay. And just want to throw that in,
yeah,
by the way.
Now, so
for the wall.
When you go to Congress, you ask for the money, and you negotiate with Congress, and Congress gives you a certain amount of money. And in this case, Congress gave him $1.37 billion. So it's not change.
But not for the wall, just for border improvements.
They could use $1.37 for fencing.
Right.
Which could be... people have, I guess, finally convinced him that building a concrete wall, you know, so that it looks beautiful in his eyes is not a realistic thing. So there is that amount of money in there already, and then he wants $5 billion more.
Yeah, 5.7 exactly. In fact, the ironic thing is that he was going to sign the bill that included $1.5 billion. And then Ann Coulter intervened, called him a wimp, and as did Rush Limbaugh and some of the Fox talking heads. And as we know, Trump doesn't get his advice from his intelligence agencies or his domestic advisors. He gets his advice from Fox and from the Ann Coulters of this world, who he thought represented his base. And when Ann Coulter called him a wimp, he turned around and decided that he would shut down the government for months or years, he said, and would only reopen it when the $5 billion and the wall were promised.
All this suffering, Klaus, and that occurred by what he's done could have been avoided because he had a deal that's better than the deal that he got already on the table, right? Yeah. I mean, there it was. It was all ready to go. Republicans and Democrats had signed off. All he had to do was say yes, and he said yes, and then he, like you're saying, he changed his mind, and it set off the shutdown, all the kind of chaos we've seen. This phony emergency declaration. When I was reading through all the different law professors, one of the things they said, see what you guys think, is that the litigation, there's going to be a vast litigation by states, by the property owners, particularly in Texas, because you have to have eminent domain to go across their property, and by all kinds of civil groups of all different sorts. And the going thinking is that this will not be resolved until after 2020. So the money may never actually get there.
Well, of course, and that's why Trump went golfing the next day. He knew that. This is nothing but theater, more Trump theater.
I think you're exactly right.
And I think what Klaus said about Ann Coulter is really important. We are experiencing all of this. We're doing this show this morning. Rather than talking about advancing humankind, we're talking about social problems, talking about all the things Democrats want to talk about. We're talking about Trump, and we're talking about his insanity. And this is a reaction to Ann Coulter, a media person calls him a name, and then he shuts down the U.S. government. Lou Dobbs, a right-wing said perfectly, I really believe the way forward here is for him to declare a national emergency and simply sweep aside the recalcitrant left in the country. These people, like Coulter, like Limbaugh, like Dobbs, believe that they are in the majority. They believe that Trump has the support, and it's just us whining liberals that don't support the president.
What's interesting, they've been spouting their views year after year. None of them have run for office. None of them have a particularly good academic or grasp of policy. What they've specialized in, and maybe you guys won't agree with me, is saying sort of outrageous things and getting control of the dialogue. So Rush Limbaugh will start about fem-Nazis, and he shifts the chain. And now we have the sort of same thing with Limbaugh and the wall. So they pushed him to build a wall that nobody has thought made any sense whatsoever for the last 2 years.
Except maybe 20% of the population. And, of course, then what happened is that Trump had finally met his match in Nancy Pelosi, because she said there would be no negotiations responding to his threat that he would only reopen the government if the wall was approved in advance. She said there would be absolutely no negotiations until the government was reopened, and she was firm. And as the Republican numbers were tanking, as they do every time these guys do a government shutdown, Trump collapsed and opened the government. And that was the longest shutdown. And the result was a compromise bill that included less than he'd asked before, $1.4 billion for some
all
kind of border improvement, but not for the wall. Now, Trump had threatened before that he'd declare national emergency, but nobody thought he would do anything that outrageous, since there is no emergency.
I think Mike figured he would do something that outrageous.
This gives him the powers that he wants. This makes him the kind of leader that he wants to be, completely authoritarian.
You mean like Putin?
So
or...
this is a no-brainer for him. And I want to get this in, that again from New York Magazine. This is a quote from Trump, which you'll never hear me do again. When I took the oath of office, I swore to protect our country, he said, and that is what I will do, always do, so help me God. In fact, the oath of office commits the president to protect the Constitution, not the country. It makes the president, he takes an oath to protect the rule of law, which is exactly the opposite of what a declaration of emergency does.
Well, that's exactly right. And nobody believed that he would actually declare national emergency because there is no emergency. Maybe health care, maybe the wealth divide or the environment, but certainly not the border. And Mitch McConnell had been outspoken against a declaration of national emergency. Trump gave him a choice, either a national emergency or close down the government again. And McConnell collapsed at that point because he knew what that would do to the Republican numbers. And Trump signed the appropriation bill, and then in an embarrassing and rambling, incoherent speech in the Rose Garden, went on long tangents about trade with China, Brexit, Syria, North Korea, finally mentioned what everybody had thought he would speak about, mentioned in passing that he was declaring a national emergency and diverting congressional funds to build the wall.
Mentioned in passing. I love that.
Well, the idea that the depth of Trump's cynicism in declaring a national emergency. I mean, he went down to El Paso, and the people in El Paso, including the Republican mayor of El Paso, said, what emergency? And he went ahead and gave the same speech. Nobody ever said anything to him.
Every representative on the border says, no wall. No wall. And you had the cynicism that not only Trump feels, but all of Washington, Democrats, for us, for you, the people we're talking to, they think you don't know or care what's going on.
And what the professors are sort of saying is, the law professors, is that there never really is a possibility of him to be able to build the wall because the legal battles will continue beyond his first term. And so it's... Go ahead, Gary. It's just all showmanship, right?
Well, to that point, I was just going to chime in with one thing that... We're still in court with some owners along the border who, over the original fence, which I think started in like 2006, and that's still in court, still undecided. Now imagine if you're whatever your feeling is about the wall, imagine if you own land on the border and a fence was going to go or a wall was going to go through your golf course and divide it in half, or your ranch and divide it in half, or take away your property, or suddenly bequeath your land to Mexico because it's on the other side of the wall. Would you not fight it yourself?
I mean, and people's cattle won't be able to get to water. The problem, folks, is that building a wall is really complicated, and they can't build it right on the Rio Grande. Even if it made sense, they can't build it. There's all the flooding. There's the irregularities. So they have to build it out away from the actual border, and they can't build it in Mexico, so they have to build it in the U.S.
I want to come back to something that Michael said about the Constitution. If you look at Article 1, and this is now verbatim, it says, Congress has the power to tax, borrow, pay debt, and provide for the common defense, the general welfare, to regulate commerce, bankruptcies, and coin money. no money shall be drawn from the treasury but in consequence of appropriations made by law. And then Article 2 talks about the presidency, says, among other things, he shall take care that the laws are faithfully executed.
All right.
And that's obviously not happening
but
here.
But, Klaus, in like, I believe it was 1976, correct me if I'm wrong, Congress packed the Emergency Powers Act, which limited the president's emergency power, but also extended it because the Congress has gotten so slow and dysfunctional that if you have an emergency like a hurricane hitting Puerto Rico or something, you need to be able to shift military spending and get those guys down there. And that's what it's for. And instead, Trump is using it to pretend anyway to fund his wall. Now, I'm sure his followers, don't you think, Gary, believe that he's going to actually build the wall. But I don't know. The people who study this say, you know, it's all show. I mean, if he was reelected by a vast majority in 2020.
We'll never forget that this whole promise from Trump came about because his handlers couldn't keep him on message about immigration. So they gave him the vision of a wall to remind him to talk about it in every one of his rallies. That's how it came about. That comes from the people that were in his campaign.
He got a really powerful response to anti-immigrant feeling. And if you look, we have to be honest and straightforward. There's anti-immigrant feeling all over Europe, all over everywhere. The vast shifts of people around, which are tiny compared to traditional things, are setting off all kinds of far right wing and xenophobic reactions, and they're doing it all over. And Trump has an intuity for sort of evil politics, and so he realized that he could ride this thing to the presidency.
The disturbing thing, I think, more than anything else, is that politics, you know, this is an example of politics becoming like a game. It's a team sport where the two teams can't, especially one, can't stand to compromise, can't stand any sort of sportsmanship. It's all about winning. So what you see from the right, you know, Trump, especially Trump's followers, is to defeat the libs, to put the libs back in their place. You know, get rid of the libtards. Show those people what you really feel. And
I think that's motivating a lot of his supporters more than the
exactly.
fact that he's actually going to be able to build this wall, which wouldn't work anyway.
Exactly.
Well, the wall is a symbol, right?
It's a symbol and it's a provocation. Because he knew when he said he was going to build a wall on 2,000 miles of border that sane people would go, what? And yeah. You know, other people would go, I don't really want a wall like that, you know.
And that was worth a graph in New York Magazine's Jordan's article, too. He says, the mere fact that Democrats are decrying Trump's abuses is causing Republicans to rally around them. This is a quote. We are becoming more unified as the Dems push out there, a Republican House member tells John Harwood. Real optimism on our side is based on extremism on their side. And the key is this for most of us that are really frightened by this. Giving Trump authoritarian powers under a declaration of emergency is like a worst case scenario. This is, you know, I've been sitting around the last 2 years telling my friends that to visit me in the camps in Omaha. You know, when Trump opens up the camps for dissidents, I'm going to be one of the first in line. The truth is, I wouldn't be the first.
You're going to volunteer.
The truth is, so people that can do him real harm will be first in line. But then sooner or later, he'll get around to us. Now, I've been making jokes about this. This declaration of emergency makes that almost
possible. So Congress Klaus is saying, it controls the spending. But Congress authorized a bill that the president can take in national emergencies, can take funds from the military and redirect them to deal with the national emergency. When they wrote that act, I'm sure they had never imagined someone like Trump would be president of the United States and systematically misuse it as political football, right?
Well, no, it was instituted because of you know, what if there's a nuclear attack or something that doesn't, you know, leave time for deliberation. But when we look at the, is there really an emergency? So let's look at a couple of numbers. In 2000, over 1.6 million people were caught trying to cross, and that's down to 300,000 in 2017. More people overstay their visas than people crossing the border. The other thing Trump says, that's how drugs enter the country, but the large seizures have all been made at legal points of entry. 90% of the heroin and 80% of the cocaine and so on and so forth have been in the first 11 months of 2018 were caught at legal crossing points. So the fact that the border will keep out drugs, it just isn't true.
Well, the other thing is that the Democrats had agreed to pretty much fund the wall in return for a deal where Trump would let the Dreamers stay permanently if they, and so Trump said, well, we'll let them stay for 3 years. We'll delay doing. And everybody goes, well, what is that? That's like nothing. And so the thing, folks, to get at is there have been lots of reasonable compromises on the table for the last 2 years. And if they haven't done it, it's because Trump is interested in as I think Gary was saying, of triumphing over his enemies. He's more interested in hurting his enemies than getting anything done.
Well, okay, and once again, if Trump were to succeed, and this bothers everybody here, you guys are all taking solace in the fact that the courts are going to smack this down. This is never going to pass muster. And everybody knows that. But it doesn't change the fact that this president proposed it. He went there. He declared the emergency. And to give him the powers that he wants, to give him this authoritarian, if he were to succeed, it would, once again, going to the mat, it would distort the effective meaning of the Constitution beyond recognition, which is one of the reasons the rest of the Republican Party isn't exactly hitting the news shows on a daily basis, supporting this emergency.
They're afraid to go against him, aren't they? Well, they're afraid of his supporters.
Ordinarily, the president's party would be rallying for the wonderful job he's doing during this emergency. As Klaus said, new study yesterday, 45,000 Americans die for lack of health care. By the way, that number had just 2019. That number hasn't changed because of the ACA. That was the same number when they passed the ACA, by the way, 45,000. That translates to somewhere between 600 and 1,000 Arizonans die every year for lack of health care. That's an emergency.
Don't forget that a large part of what he's calling an emergency at the border are refugees seeking asylum, legitimately seeking asylum, and children being put in holding, crates, and being, not even tracked, being separated from their parents. They're coming in large numbers because our government so screwed up Central America by arming,
particularly Honduras, screwed up.
Nicaragua and El Salvador, we in the 80s armed death squads so that despots could stay in power.
Chile.
And we created begin with.
People don't like the idea of people organizing whole caravans and pouring people into the country illegally. Even if it's compared to actual historic immigration, it's almost negligible. They don't like the idea of the stuff. And they don't, I don't know what whose asylum laws have been developed over many, many decades.
The question is, who's organizing those caravans? The interesting coincidence, I mean, they try to blame it on, I have this theory about the Trump administration. If they want to do something or have done something that's illegal or unethical, they blame the other side. Yeah. For doing the very thing that they've done or going to do.
Almost rote at this point, Gary, isn't it?
But
Trump always accuses people of doing exactly what he's done.
Coincidentally, the caravans all started right at a point preceding some important issue that the administration was facing. Right before the midterms, we have announcements of a big caravan coming. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that was planned by the people who are accusing the left of doing it.
Yeah, I don't know. The new study from the Mexican government is an awful lot of the people in the caravan have turned around and gone back and taken their free tickets back to Honduras.
Would you walk 1,000 miles?
Yeah, and what they're saying is that the caravan had a lot of genuine asylum seekers and had a lot of people who just kind of jumped on board. This is a great adventure. Let's head north. We'll walk. We'll get into America. We'll make a living, send the money back home, all this sort of thing. What do you do about this sort of situation where people of doubtful, I mean, the truth is that they're not really threatened by the Honduran government, right, for example. Let's just say Congress. They're threatened by all the gangs and the violence and the poverty, right?
So what you do about it is what we've done before, which is you process them. You process their asylum applications as they always have, but there was no need to make a big deal about it and whip up all this hysteria. I want to come back to something that Michael said about being afraid of the camps, because as most of you know, I grew up in Germany after the war. So, I mean, my sense is that Trump's declaration scares the hell out of me. And it's not all that dissimilar to how Hitler assumed absolute power and abolish the legislative process. Now, I'm not saying anything like this will happen in the United States. I still cling to this romantic notion that I hope is correct, that we have 200 years of democratic institutions that will prevent it, that Germany didn't have. But having grown up in the post-Nazi era in Berlin, Trump's modus operandi sends cold shivers of fear down my back. No doubt about it. But as Steve pointed out, you know, this is going into the courts first, and we'll take, and in his rambling speech, Trump admitted that the courts will strike it down, but his hope is on the Supreme Court.
He also admitted, didn't he, Klaus, that not only would the courts strike it down, but that he was doing it to speed things along. They didn't really have to do it. Didn't he say that? Right.
Yeah,
correct.
He said, he literally said, I don't have to do it, but I want to.
So an emergency declaration is supposed to be something that you have to do, not something that you decide
said is, I could do it slower, but I want to do it fast.
Yeah. Well, they've handed him a loaded weapon. He's handed himself a loaded weapon. This is And don't forget, emergency powers comes with an internet kill switch, by the way. Many of us get our information, our daily dose, from the internet. So that's one of the scary powers, I think. And I'm looking at Atlantic Magazine here now that the Supreme Court has, I want a little nuts and bolts stuff here. The National Emergencies Act in 1976, they tried to update some of the stuff from the Korean War and World War II and that kind of thing. But according to Atlantic, there are 30 states of emergency in effect today. A lot of these statutory things in local places, so they can keep getting funding for this, that, this or that or the other thing. But the National Emergencies Act of 1976 said that Congress was supposed to review national emergencies or acts of emergency every 6 months. Congress hasn't reviewed a single emergency act since 1976. But it is in statute anyway.
They enabled the presidency to deal with emergencies.
And most of the emergency powers have been used for things like sanctions for human or narcotics trafficking. There was no disagreement from Congress, but it was never used to get around Congress, especially since Congress made it clear that they do not spend the extra $1 billion on the wall. So this is really a totally different situation.
So am I wrong? And this is the only declaration of national emergency that has caused all these issues. Almost all the rest of them went through. This is the only controversial one in all the years since 1976, and the statute was put in.
Some of us, including your buddy, William Timmerman, freaked out when George Bush, in his response to 9/11, his executive order 13-224 that made it prohibited transactions not just with any suspected foreign terrorist, but with any foreigner or any U.S. citizen suspected of providing them with support. Once a person is designated under the order, no American can legally give him a job, rent him an apartment, provide him with medical services, or even sell him a loaf of bread unless the government grants a license to allow the transaction. These kinds of powers in the hands of a president. And so George Bush did this in response to 9/11. He had lots of powers. The Patriot Act bothered lots of us, and nobody even talks about it anymore. It's become a part of American life.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned,
I think the abuses that's a good point. I haven't heard about the Patriot Act now in several years.
Well, it's the abuses that are heaped on us by federal law enforcement. It's become, like I said, a part of American life. We're used to this. We were way more democratic before
the Patriot Act actually had a big effect on financial institutions, because they now have to be extremely careful about transactions. Any suspicious transaction, transfer of funds, has to be reviewed. And I remember when I worked on Wall Street, the Patriots Act, every time you open a new account, the Patriots Act came into play. Anytime somebody transferred a large amount of money from one account to the other, the Patriots Act came into play. So it's still there and it's still working. I want to throw in one thing, a non-sequitur, but I thought it's hilariously funny. Ann Coulter, who is one of Trump's earliest supporters, and Trump and he had a love feast for a long time after she called him a wimp. When the declared emergency, Ann Coulter said, "The only emergency is that the president is an idiot."
I think that's the general consensus among people involved in politics.
The only thing she's ever said that I could actually agree
well,
with.
That's
no,
right.
It may be the underlying consensus of pretty much every. I don't think it emerges into the public. I don't think his supporters. For example, the wall, suppose you're really afraid of immigration from Central America. Wall sounds good until you actually think about what it would mean. It'd be billions and billions of dollars for this concrete wall, and there are things called tunnels and ultralights. Well,
anybody that's spent 5 minutes reading history realizes that walls don't work. We can go back.
They don't, though, Mike. I don't think they do.
Well, we had a wall.
Walls don't work.
The China worked, right?
We had a wall in Berlin that actually tragically worked quite well, but it was a short wall, and it was every few hundred meters was a tower of people with machine guns. And I don't think that's what they
Let me doing. Clear up the Patriot Act. Following a lack of congressional approval, parts of the Patriot Act expired. And I remember this argument then, June 1st, 2015. The Patriot Act really doesn't exist. And with the passing of the USA Freedom Act on June 2nd, 2015, so Patriot Act died June 1st, 2015.
Okay,
they passed the U.S. Freedom Act
that's
on
why
June
we haven't
2nd,
heard talk about
2015,
it.
And restoring, quite frankly, all the expired parts of the Patriot Act through 2019. So we're going to have this argument this
what
year.
What I see is the importance of good leadership. I mean, when 9/11 happened, and I was down there right next to where it happened, George Bush acted pretty well originally. And I don't know whether it was Cheney or some of these other guys, but originally George Bush seemed really presidential. He seemed to be using his power. He seemed to be bringing people together. He told people not to attack.
Direction.
Not to attack Muslims, for example. When I was walking back from ground zero and there were women that were in saris, they were actually Indian, but I saw people staring at him. Hostily, like they were Muslims. And nothing like that happened in New York. There were no attacks on Muslims. There was no general thing. And George Bush started that way, and then he curved off into this unnecessary war based on completely phony justification. So it's important to have a good president. So now we have somebody even worse in terms of Trump.
One of the things I despise about our current culture is that, particularly with regard to politics, is that no one has time for nuance and to understand the gray areas. Everybody is dividing up over black and white issues. So it makes it very easy for an individual or a party to create villains, like immigrants, and make them, some kind of approaching evil that we should all be afraid of. And no one has the time or takes the time, at least, to read what's behind it and all of the nuances involved. And every issue is a complex issue, especially today. But the Republican Party in particular has tried to oversimplify
things. So Gary,
things.
What would and Mike and Klaus, what would a real, so there's a problem with immigration. There are issues with immigration. There are big disagreements. What would a realistic dialogue about immigration look like? What would the positions be? What would people be talking about? They wouldn't be talking about a wall over 2,000 miles of southern border. What would they be talking about?
You're talking about what should the immigration laws look like, in our opinion? Is that what you're asking?
Well, I'm saying we can't even imagine. Gary is saying it's so partisan it's almost a dysfunctional from the beginning. And I just asked the question is, what would an actual dialogue about immigration look like?
I could chime in with that. First of all, take a look at DACA. You have kids that were brought here when they were, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old that don't even know the language of the country they came from. They don't know the culture of the country they came from. And yet, people like Trump would deport them because they're not citizens.
But you're saying in immigration policy, they should just be citizens.
They should have a path to citizenship.
There you go.
Take a look at the labor market and the need for immigrants to do jobs that they're currently doing that, we consider, or at least, some Americans consider illegal. They're illegal immigrants. A lot of our economy wouldn't flourish and survive without those immigrants.
That's exactly right.
And they, people say, well, they're abusing our system and our safety nets. No, they're not. They're contributing huge. I think the last number I read was $12 billion a year they pay in taxes without any hope of getting any benefit back from that.
But wouldn't a conservative say it doesn't matter if they're contributing to the economy? All of Trump's stuff about statistics of criminality is all phony. There are actually less crime among immigrants. Even if all that true, I think a conservative said they're still violating American law, and therefore they should be thrown out of the country.
It's black and white. But my basic philosophy with politics is two things. Don't be cruel and don't be stupid. And I think this administration has embraced both of those things. They are extremely cruel and extremely stupid.
Mike? Absolutely. Yeah, work visas, without a doubt. I mean, what should immigration, going back to that quote, what should immigration policy look like? We have, like most countries, like most normal countries, you look at what you need to have done, and you allow work visas for all sorts of things. So that way we don't have illegal immigration. You have lots and lots of immigrants. And we have lots to the north and to the south, and you make them legal. That's the way it goes. They were legal 30 years ago. We changed the law. We made it illegal. So just so Republicans can say it's illegal to be an immigrant, and that's sort of crazy. A lot of during all of this, I remember it's about 7 or 8 years ago. There was something, 150,000 Canadians just in L.A. that had overstayed their visa, that were there illegally. We didn't worry about the 150,000 Canadians for some reason. We worry about the brown people coming from the
south. Let me talk about it from the perspective of an actual immigrant. There's no doubt in my mind that the fair and just and also economically sensitive idea is that those people who are already here illegally and are working and so forth should have a path to citizenship. And that would eliminate this whole idea of people living in the twilight, afraid to go to the hospital, afraid to go to the police. They're second-class citizens in a way that's a little similar to the way the Jews had become second-class citizens. We don't need second-class citizens. So legalize the fair process to road to becoming citizens. Obviously, the kids who are brought here should have a path to citizenship, and then immigration should be handled as it was when I was an immigrant. You applied to come to the United States, and there were certain criteria, and if you match those, you are allowed to come. And if people come over the border with asylum requests, those are processed, and if people come across the border illegally, then they should be sent back. But we have to finally accept that the 12 million illegal immigrants who contribute so much to our economy, and without whom we would be now what's the word I can use on radio? Things wouldn't go anywhere near as well as they are. They should become citizens. They've lived here for decades. They have no more connection to their home country.
So why don't we have, and what Klaus is talking about is a broad deal about citizenship. So the DACA kids stay. We revive what our criteria are for who can come here legally. We set different rate. Why don't we do that? Why do we have this sort of completely dysfunctional system?
Three letters. G-O-P. There was an agreement in Congress, over an immigration plan reform, and they blocked it. Mitch McConnell has blocked every single initiative that would address these, and until now he's obviously allowing the man in the White House to be cruel. And I'd bring up one other issue. Real quick, is there's a case in the Supreme Court today that is going to impact that, and that is the census.
We want to get updated here on Democrats of the Red Rocks. That helps a Democratic perspective stay on the air. They do have their upcoming breakfast. It sounds like a good one at Old Sedona, 8 o'clock, February 21st. We got Danielle Perry from NAU, NAU professor on politics. We got Nancy Steele from Friends of the Verde River. We got Brenda Hauser on the Verde Natural Resources and Conservation District. We have Felicia French, Arizona legislator candidate and a sustainability instructor. They're all going to be talking about the future of river and groundwater in northern Arizona right here in Sedona.
We're going to try to have them on the show, too, Mike.
February 21st. And yeah, we may have another full studio full of all these brilliant and informed women talking about the water issue. We will have, don't forget, Terry Goddard's coming next month to talk about a really important campaign finance reform. He likes to call it outlaw dirty money. That campaign is starting again, and he'll be here soon. Next month to talk about outlaw dirty money, and I was a part of it last time, and I plan on being a part of it this time. Don't forget, we have Democratic Perspective available. All our podcasts are available at vvid.org. You want to check out some of our old shows. We got some great old shows. Don't forget, you can listen to us anywhere in the world. You can listen to Democratic Perspective online anywhere in the world. So please check us out, KAZM 780.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning.